The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's Friday. It's Friday, everyone. Yes. Awesome. So that means the weekend is just, a mere hour away for me. Anyway, welcome to the program. You know, yesterday, as the show was ending, I said, tomorrow, Don McGahn is testifying. Finally, 2 years later, but finally, Don McGahn is showing up. Don McGahn, former White House counsel. And you remember, he fought the subpoena. You know, one thing we learned during the Trump years is that although the Constitution gives Congress oversight responsibilities for the executive branch, we have allegedly a system known as checks and balances. We learned about it in third grade. It doesn't work because although the House does have oversight responsibilities and subpoena power, the White House under the former guy just ignored the subpoenas. And they never sent out the sergeant at arms or anybody to enforce it, to either arrest the person who ignored the subpoena or fine them or something. There was no consequences for saying, I don't have to deal with the subpoena. You have no power over me. And by doing that or by not doing anything, they basically gave up the power. So a good question is, who has the oversight power? I don't know. And it's one of the things that we need to reestablish. By we, I mean the American people, because that's who our government is, ostensibly or supposed to be, of, by, and for the people. But we have this guy, and I thought we were rid of him, but unfortunately we're not. The orange one is fucking nuts. He's crazy and getting worse by the day. So you heard today, Facebook sent down its final pronouncement that Donald Trump will be suspended from Facebook for the next 2 years. Okay, that works for me. I don't know why just 2 years, but for 2 years. And he's no longer on Twitter, and obviously he's no longer on Facebook. I was taken in. Somebody posted something about why is Trump still up on Facebook, and sure enough, his account's still there. But there are no posts after the insurrection, because that's when he was suspended. So his page remains because it hasn't been totally killed off, but he can't post there. Nobody can post there. So I was mistaken. So that's the story there. So after I can't find the first thing, man. I love when I start off so strong. I have everything lined up and ready to go. There were two tweets that I found. They weren't actually tweets. They were his statements. Donald Trump, you know, no longer has the power of the Twitter or really any social media. So what he does is he releases these statements. And he doesn't have his website anymore, because that lasted all of 29 days. Oh, I know. It's just, but to hear him talk, well, to hear him say it, it was just too much. Well, we'll get to there. I'll explain. We'll have Donald himself explain why he killed off the website. But anyway, so. There was one, damn it, why did I close that window? The first response to that Trump sent out to being, told that he's suspended for another 2 years, somebody posted it. Now I can't find it because obviously I closed that window because I'm a dodo. Hold on, let me see if I have it on this computer because that would just make too much sense. Is it there? I don't think so. Primaries, no. Opinion media, no. All right. No, I must have, I closed it. But I do have the second one. So first time he railed, he screamed, you know, metaphorically, I mean, on in print. And now he sent out another one. And Caitlin Collins of CNN tweeted this out with a caveat. She said, have been hesitant to tweet many statements since he left office, but making an exception for this one following his 2-year suspension. And it comes on, I don't know who sends it out, his office, I guess. And it's statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th president of the United States of America. And below in big letters, you know, where it says statement in little letters, it says, next time I'm in the White House, there will be no more dinners at his request with Mark Zuckerberg and his wife. It will be all business. No, I'm sorry. That's very funny. But it is funny. If only we could allow ourselves the pleasure of laughing. And I'm going to play for you by way of promoting what's coming up. So a little later in the hour, we're going to check in with Marcy Wheeler, you know, emptywheel.net, Marcy Wheeler, who these days is living in Ireland. And so when I contacted her this morning and asked if she could come on the show today, she said, definitely, but can we tape it earlier? Because it's, you know, it's getting on in late there. It's 5 or 6 hours ahead. So no problem. So we taped it a little while ago. The last question I asked her, her answer actually didn't surprise me. Now I approached it in a kind of a flippant manner because of the subject matter, but why do I have a sound coming back here? But her answer actually made a lot of sense. So here is the final question that I asked Marcy, but you want to hear the whole interview. It's coming up, but, here's what I asked her. With all this stuff going on, what do you make of Donald Trump insisting he's going to be reinstated in as president in August?
I think people should not dismiss it as a delirium. Uh-huh. I think people should remember that he successfully called a coup once, and I think that he would love to call a coup again. Uh-oh. And so, you know, like this notion that, oh, it doesn't work that way. The reason it doesn't work that way is because it would be a coup, but we know that he has a pattern of
trying to
attempting coups. Right. And so we should use this as, we should recognize it as nothing else but Trump trying to sow another coup.
Wow. Okay. Important. That's really important. And I'm glad you said that, because you got to take this guy seriously. As crazy as he is, he's got this cult following that I never thought he could amass, and yet they're still with him, and they're you know, now they're looking at this like they looked at January 6th, which
and
scares
Mike Flynn.
Me.
Right. I mean, Mike Flynn just called for a coup.
Yes,
so you
he
put
did.
Those two together, and the two people who were publicly calling for a coup a month before the January 6th coup attempt are calling for an August coup.
Yep.
And so I think that you know, he may be a delirious old man, but he has successfully once already attempted a coup.
Right.
And so you can't dismiss it as just the rants of a crazy old man.
Right. And that's such an important point. And again, it was at the tail end of the interview. I'll tell you something. Marcy Wheeler does such a great job of keeping track of everything that's going on. And what we talked about today really had to do with the insurrection prosecutions and the related potential prosecutions and lawsuits and everything that's happening. I don't know how she keeps track of it all, because I can't. My brain sort of overloads. But so stay tuned. We'll be checking in with Marcy in about 20 minutes or so. But I thought you would like to hear, maybe in his own words, sort of, why, you know, what Donald Trump thinks about being suspended by YouTube and I'm sorry, but I have being suspended by YouTube on the brain, by being suspended by Facebook for another 2 years. I thought we'd just check in at the source, because, you know, who better to ask than the man, the orange one himself.
So Facebook has announced this week that they're banning me for another 2 years from their, honestly, sort of an overrated platform. I don't even know if I need it now that I have Mike Lindell's thing and also Parler.
Yeah.
And more time since we shut down the blog. You know, the blog was too successful, so we shut it down. to give other, you know, we wanted to give other sites on the internet a chance. You wouldn't believe the traffic. The traffic was like, it was like a traffic jam to my site. And people on, you know, Amazon Bezos, he contacted me.
Yeah.
And he said, Sir, we need you to shut down your blog. You're destroying traffic to our website. And I said, you know, people want the Trump desk blog thing that we were doing. So I was nice. Uh-huh. I was nice and I shut it down. But 2023, that's when they want to shut me down. But guess what? I'll be back in 2023 running for re-election.
Gotcha.
And as an added bonus, Matt Gaetz's girlfriend will be 17. So she'll be able to vote in the 2024 election. So we're excited about that. She'll probably get involved in the campaign, you know, and we might even put her in charge of, you know, Teens for Trump on the Facebook chat group. So thank you, Matt Gaetz. Thank you for introducing us. And, you know, my youngest son, Brendan, said, you know, I thought about fixing them up. And he said to me, Dad, and I said, don't ever call me that. And he said, sir. And
your
said,
youngest son, like Brendan?
He said, I don't want to date Matt Gaetz because we were going to have him sort of.
Oh, Baron.
Yeah, you know, it was like a front. You know, like when Matt Gaetz would want to see his girlfriend, we would have my son, Brendan. As sort of a.
Baron, right?
You know, like a front. Uh-huh. And then it would be like, oh, look, your friend is here. Your date is here. And he said, I don't want to date Matt Gaetz's girlfriend. She's too young for me. So good luck, Matt Gaetz, with everything that's going on. And we will see you on Facebook and on the campaign trail in 2023. And we'll see what happens.
Oh, and that's it. Okay. So that is, in case you were wondering, that is J.L. Coven, who does the best Donald Trump. And you need to check out his YouTube channel, because he's not resting his laurels on his Trump imitation. He does them all. He does the MyPillow guy. He does Mitch McConnell. He does he's really expanding his repertoire. So he's just awesome. And of course, we can't rid ourselves of the Orange Man quickly enough, because did you know he's doing he's speaking tomorrow. Now, I thought, and I could be wrong, I think he's starting up rallies again. I really tune out. And you'll notice, and I hope you appreciate the fact, that I do not talk about him much on this program anymore. I don't play a lot of clips. In fact, there's a great mashup that CNN put together of all the time Republicans threw family members under the bus to appease the former guy. And it started with Jeb Bush's son, who's now running for Attorney General of Texas, and sucking up to Trump. After what Trump did to his family, what he said about his family, it's just crazy. But I didn't, because there was too much of him in it. So I'm sparing you that. I won't play that for you. But just heaping the praise on J.L. Coven, who was ridiculously funny. But there's a lot of material there. And so I said tomorrow, I knew he was doing a rally. What I didn't realize is he is speaking at the North Carolina Republican Party convention. And he is a keynote speaker tomorrow afternoon. And I only know this because I get alerts from C-SPAN. And the headline in the C-SPAN email says, former president guy, you know, the guy, speaks at North Carolina GOP convention. And that's going to happen. He's speaking tomorrow at 5:30 Eastern. And C-SPAN is going to carry it live because they're carrying the entire day live. But here is my pronouncement, if that's the right word to use, to CNN and MSNBC. Do not carry the moron live. That's how we got stuck with him in the first place, because you saw ratings and you thought, ooh, people are going to tune in for the train wreck. And, you know, many did. That's the reason that they tuned in, for the comedy value of it. There's nothing comic about it anymore. This is serious as it gets. This man is sick. He's demented. And this whole thing about he's going to be reinstated in August, he believes this shit. Or he talks about it. He says it enough so that his sycophantic followers believe it. And that's all you need. You know, you heard Marcy Wheeler. You heard that clip. He started a coup before. He has no compunctions about another coup. It's the coup. The coup. It's coup. So C-SPAN, you know what? They're going to carry it because they carry state political conventions and things like that. They're carrying the whole day. Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota, is speaking at 12 noon. She's also on the schedule. So I honestly don't fault C-SPAN, but let me tell you something. CNN, don't blow it. I really doubt MSNBC will carry it live. I'm sure they'll tape it and show some highlights, you know, the really batshit crazy stuff. CNN, I'm never quite sure. And they're hurting ratings-wise lately. So this is my warning to them. Don't do it! You know, CNN has just made a really good change. If you're like me and you couldn't stomach watching Morning Jerk in the morning anymore, you know, I want the news on in the morning when I wake up so I know what's, you know, just set the stage for the day. And I used to put that on. But now CNN has Brianna Keeler on in the morning, and she's really good. I'm telling you, if you're a regular, like, Morning Jerk viewer, check that out next week and then tell me what you think. I'm impressed. All right, I thought I'd throw that in there. A few other items to get to before before Marcy Wheeler. Alan West is in the news again. Oh, yeah, my nemesis, my former congressman. A few weeks ago, when I was on vacation or took a day off, I haven't taken a vacation in years. When I was taking a day off, I need a Friday, I need a weekend. I played an older show, a best of, and I played the show from 11 years earlier when I was arrested at the town hall meeting, alleged town hall meeting by my then congressman. That was him, Alan West, who then thankfully lost re-election. He moved to Texas. I guess that's more his speed. And he became the Republican Party chairman for the state of Texas. Well, today he quit, resigned as of, 5 o'clock, I guess, Texas time. So maybe he's still in office for another hour or so. But so Alan West, and some of the comments on it are just hysterical. But he is just a sorry excuse for a human being. And the thing is, you know, and people are calling him out for what he is. He's leaving his post as head of the Republican Party in Texas in much worse shape than it was when he got in. He's bankrupted them and left them hurting. No surprise there. And the belief, the rumor is that he's going to announce that he's primarying the governor of Texas. I wouldn't put it past him, because that's the kind of shit he does. And I hope he goes down in flames. You know, when my response on Twitter, when someone said, someone tweeted the story this morning that he was stepping down. And I said, oh, what a shame, you know, rest in peace. I know he's not dead, but wishful thinking anyway. Okay, out of Israel, looks like Netanyahu is out. They formed a government with 8 different parties. Maybe we need to start in with some of that. But 8 different parties have joined together to oust Netanyahu. They range from the ultra far right, much further right than Netanyahu, if that's even possible, to a little bit left. I mean, it's not really liberal, but a centrist party. And there's an Arab Israeli party too. first time an Arab Israeli party representative is part of the new government. They just have to get it through the Knesset, that's Israel's parliament, and when they meet next week, and that's all that's left. So what is Netanyahu doing? He's going out calling it a fraud, and it's like fake news, and he's echoing all of Trump's bullshit rhetoric that he got from, you know, the people who came before him, Vladimir Putin and other dictators and dictator wannabes. So that's going on next week. Hopefully we can celebrate. Maybe we'll try to place a call to Israel again to talk about them at least being rid of Netanyahu, because I don't know who's going to, you know, the guy who's going to be the next prime minister is the head of the further right group. But that's only for 2 years, and then another one takes over. So it's going to be a revolving leadership thing. Nobody, I don't think anybody, will ever be prime minister of Israel for another 12 to 15 years. Or I hope not anyway. Hope not anyway. Job numbers are out. It was a good report, about double what it was last month. Even though the analysts thought it was going to be a little higher, it's a good sign. It looks like things are progressing the way they're supposed to. The one other story that that caught my eye, that I don't quite believe it. The whole UFO thing, right? We're hearing all these stories about the UFOs, and now the military and the government is admitting that Navy pilots have seen these things and see them all the time. But what they're saying, their report that's going to be issued, I guess, next week or something, says there's no sign that they are alien life. What? Now, I get that, you know, there's no proof, right? It's not, it says here, U.S. intelligence officials have found no evidence that they are alien spacecraft. That's kind of like the glass is half empty. I say the report doesn't explain decades of unusual sightings, and it doesn't firmly rule out the theory that they might be alien in nature. Just, you know, swallow that for a minute. All right, we got to get to Marcy in just a moment. Two things I want to share with you, though, before we go. There's a Twitter account that I follow that I haven't seen much of lately. In the last couple of days, they keep popping up in my feed. And it's called Limericking. And they write limericks for news stories. So Limericking put out this tweet today. His Facebook account is still toast, the company said in a post. This won't be undone until his next run, when he and they profit the most. Ah, honesty in those words. All right, I'll tell you what. Quick timeout and back with Marcy Wheeler in a moment. Okay, so while Progressive Voices is in ads, I'm going to play for you a song on the subject. Oh, we haven't done that in a few days, just honestly, mostly because with the lockdown sort of ending, so too have many of the parodies. They're just not coming as quickly as they used to. But when I find a good one, I will share it with you. Sometimes I build them up. But anyway, our old pal, Mangy Fetlocks, everybody, has a new one. And let me see if I can do this without screwing up my desktop here. All right, so here's Mangy Fetlocks and his newest song. It's called Donald Trump Has Lost His Mind. Take it away, Mangy.
Mangy Fetlocks here. Donald Trump has lost his mind now. He eats mostly jelly beans. When he gets a purple one, he says, in August I'll be queen. He will wear a pink tiara or a nice Burger King crown and a bathrobe. He tells everyone's his coronation gown. Donald Trump has lost his mind now. Yeah, he's really pretty bad. Just the other day he let it slip he might be Eric's dad. He will watch old episodes of Fox and Friends where he called in, or read inspirational letters drawn in crayon by Mike Flynn. Donald Trump has lost his mind now. He's pathetic in extreme. He's got plastic G.I. Joes he calls Donald's SEAL team. There's a model of the White House that he orders them to storm as he wears his custom-tailored Nazi SS uniform.
Ooh.
He thinks he looks pretty good.
I bet
Donald
he does.
Trump has lost his mind now, making lists of who to whack. Soon as he regains the White House and his nuclear codes are back, he has plans for martial law in any states that Biden won, and new verses for the Bible proving he's the chosen one.
Ah, thank you, Manji Fetlocks.
Thanks for listening.
Well, thank you, sir. That is actually Bruce W. Nelson, who uses a pseudonym to record these wonderful videos. Mangy Fatlock's got a couple other characters, too, but he does a couple of these videos almost every day. good guy and funny and talented. All right, quick promo. Oh, shit, I don't even really have time. All right, let me just tell you. Let's bring back our Progressive Voices listeners. And very quickly, let me tell you what we've got coming up next week, because next week is going to be epic on the show. Next week, Ari Berman will join us. Ari Berman, of course, writes about elections, election irregularities for Mother Jones Magazine. He's got the cover story there now, which goes into how the Republicans plan to totally further fuck up our voting system. It's a really good story. Read it. Who else? Next week, Monday, Dennis Kucinich will be here. He has a new book. Sorry, I'm bending down. His new book just arrived. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to read it by Monday, but I'll check it out. So former Congressman Dennis Kucinich. And then we have, Cory Doctorow, who's great also. So I'm excited. We have a big, busy week next week. But today is Friday. Yay. And, now it's time for Marcy Wheeler. I'm so happy, always happy when Marcy Wheeler joins us. And she joins us from far away. So I got to start. I always have to ask, how's life in Ireland?
This weekend, the pubs are finally reopening. Not for in-pub drinking. I still have yet to drink a Guinness in a proper pub since I moved here, not quite a year ago. But I think that my spouse and I should be able to walk down the street later on and get a takeaway pint from the local pub, which we could have done last summer, but that's been shut down since then. So
wow. Now, when we spoke, it was before the holidays. I think we've spoken since then, but we spoke before the holidays, and you were under the impression that they were doing everything right there so that you guys were going to be able to have a normal Christmas, and then everything went crazy, right, and shut down again?
Everyone, I remember before Christmas walking by the local barbershop, and it was packed with people. None of them masked, all getting their boys shaved to go to grandma's house for Christmas or something. And so that's that plus I guess it was the UK variety or one, we got one of the bad varietals coming in from the UK. And so everything spiked and then it took us far longer than in the US to get vaccinated. So I'm one shot into my vaccine, but.
Wow. Oh, so the vaccines are going on over there. People are being vaccinated. Obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm halfway done. So.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. And you're liking it over there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're still shut down.
Right.
But
so you're not out and about. So you are still covering everything going on over here, as you've always done at emptywheel.net. And as I said to you in the message I sent, it seems like you are doing the only comprehensive updates on the individuals who participated in the insurrection on January 6th and the charges against them and what's happening. So, how does it look? Is our Justice Department on top of this? Are they really going to prosecute? It's what, 400 people have been arrested so far?
450 federal arrestees.
Wow.
And there are BOLOs, be on the lookout for basically wanted posters for suspected assailants of cops. There are upwards of 150 of those. So, you know, it's going to be 600-700 by the time they're done, even assuming that they don't work their way up the chain into the people who organized the insurrection. So it's a lot of people.
Okay, and good. So do you have faith in the Justice Department? I'm asking this because I've seen some kind of red flags about Merrick Garland, and so far I'm not that impressed with the job he's doing.
The things that people point to as red flags for Garland, and I'll accept out the, you know, appointing people who used to work at Facebook kind of thing. And I'm not crazy about the appointee for the National Security Division, but accepting that, and those I think are unsurprising appointments, but nevertheless, you know, I get why people are disappointed. I've also written very closely on the Barr memo, and I'm not convinced we know why Garland is defending it, but I'm not surprised they are in any case. I just think, given that the department isn't leaking like a sieve, we don't actually know what's going on. I mean, like I'm also covering the Rudy Giuliani case in New York, and I will tell you, I suspect that is going to snowball and in crazy ways. I mean, it's, I think, narrowly targeted right now, but I think that, you know, Rudy has basically said he's going to bring down the people who permitted him to go out and solicit Russian disinformation. And those people include Bill Barr. And so I think Rudy is going to try and do a lot of damage on his way down. And I think that what SDNY has already seized is going to be really damning for Rudy.
Oh, interesting.
So that's a really kind of circular way of saying, DOJ has an incentive to fully prosecute January 6th. It started chaotically because for a number of reasons. One is, I think Michael Sherwin, who was then the acting U.S. attorney in D.C., may have realized he was complicit because he had been installed by Bill Barr and done some things that were corrupt. And so he may have overreacted or may have wanted to separate himself from what was an obvious outcome of some things that DOJ had earlier done.
Are you talking about when he went on 60 Minutes?
Well, right. I mean, so he wants them to charge seditious conspiracy right away. And that may not be the best way to hold the Proud Boys accountable, but I also don't rule out that it's going to get there. I mean, I wrote a piece today where I said Ethan Nordine's lawyer tried to throw out his entire indictment yesterday. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. You're complaining about being charged with trespassing.
Right.
But one of the points I made in that post was, I was like, even if you get all of these charges thrown out, they're going to turn around and charge you with seditious conspiracy. And it, you know, the circumstances that in the past have made seditious conspiracy not work may not exist here. So you're still on the hook for starting an insurrection, or they could charge him with insurrection. You shouldn't be complaining about your trespassing charge.
Right.
But that's the least of your worries. So anyway, I think that the thing people need to remember is that complex conspiracies take a while to build, and they are trying to build, you know, they're trying to do a bunch of things at once. One is they're trying to work their way, you know, like get a sense of the conspiracies at the center of this. And those conspiracies on paper right now are just the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. But I fully anticipate that we're going to see, and this makes sense, we're going to see some networks. Like, we're going to see, everyone expects there to be a network in LA. All of the people who organized anti-mask protests in LA, you know, they all flew to the insurrection together, or they all knew of what they, you know. And so, you know, that makes sense. Like, in Michigan, too, the anti-mask protests were kind of a feeding ground for people who went on to participate in the insurrection. And so we should expect networks that are state-based to have played an important part in the organization. And I say this a lot, and I'm sure you really, this hits home for you, right? If we prove an overarching conspiracy that integrates people like, say, Donald Trump, it's likely to go through Florida.
Oh, because, no doubt.
even on what's on paper right now, the Oath Keeper and the Proud Boy conspiracies clearly are overlapping, and they clearly were talking to each other. Kelly Meggs, who is an Oath Keeper defendant who is in Florida, a car dealer in Florida, of all things.
Wow.
He said in December, you know, I've organized basically an alliance between all of the militias. And that was right after an event where he did security for Roger Stone.
Oh, God.
So, you know, you've got Roger Stone, the Proud Boys, and the Oath Keepers, and Roger Stone has close ties to both of them. There's this scene in the Oath Keeper conspiracy where now three of the defendants are at the Willard Hotel, which is where Roger Stone is. And they're getting these calls back and forth from the main organizer on the day. Like, he's calling this guy, Joshua James, and then Joshua James is calling back in like a minute later. And that happens for like an hour and a half. And it's the kind of thing where it seems clear they're consulting with somebody at the Willard, and I don't know who that is. Huh. I'm not saying it's Roger Stone.
Right.
But and then as soon as the Proud Boys break into the Capitol, these three men and a couple of other people hop, like they grab a golf cart that was being used for security purposes and drive quickly to the Capitol and themselves, you know, breach the Capitol. And so that's a really, I think, key part of the conspiracy. And it's the kind of things that hint that they're going to go further, but it just takes a lot of time. And then, you know, at the same time as they're doing that, they have to collect evidence. Mm-hmm. And even though you look at the pictures and you're like, there's so much video evidence of this, there are particular pockets of activity on the day. A couple of doors that are particularly important. A couple of, like, there's a space inside the scaffolding that was set up for the inauguration that I suspect makes sense. There weren't cameras showing underneath the scaffold because it was covered scaffolding.
Right.
So a couple of offices, like Merkley's office, his laptop got stolen.
Yeah.
And they still have not arrested. They have not named anyone who stole his laptop. And so one of the things I think that they're doing is they're identifying MAGA tourists who were in those places and were shown taking video on their phone and arresting them, getting their phone, because that evidence is going to be used against people who did more serious things. So they're still arresting MAGA tourists. And I think many of the people that they're arresting for their video, right?
Gotcha. Right.
And then there's all of these assault defendants that they keep churning through. I mean, I think my numbers say there are 90 charged assault defendants. And like I said, that number could easily double. Mm.
Wow.
And so those are the three things that are going on that we can see. We don't know whether there are people behind the scenes that are investigating, you know, the organizers. One thing we've seen very little of, for example, there are two or three defendants who organized either buses or caravans of groups of people.
Right.
But we know that there were other buses that were paid for. And this isn't necessarily Clarence Thomas's wife. There were a bunch of other buses. But for example, one of the Proud Boy defendants took a bus that he said was paid for by the Proud Boys from Florida. Again, everything goes through Florida.
Always.
But well, I mean, there was actually a meeting in Pennsylvania that's going to end up being really important. But anyway, he takes a bus that was paid for by the Proud Boys to get to D.C., and he ends up assaulting some police. And whoever paid for those buses is on the hook, too. Like, whoever
sure.
paid for those buses is part of a larger conspiracy to get bodies, including this guy who ended up assaulting cops and being key to the, you know, to the drop of their defense. And so we're not seeing that in charging documents yet, but I fully assume it's going on. And then, like I said, I mean, and I did a post on this the other day as well. Like, if we're going to get to even Roger Stone and Mike Flynn and Rudy mm-hmm. Giuliani, I mean, we know, for example, that Rudy Giuliani was in touch with a guy who is the brother of this guy, John Sullivan, who's been charged.
Okay.
So he's only one degree of separation from a known arrested insurrectionist. to get to those people, we're going to have to, it's going to be through conspiracy charges. That's how you do it. And so, you know, it's going to take a while to flip people. It's going to take a while. Like, one of the things that's happening is it's, you know, imagine how many phones they're having to crack the passwords of.
Right.
So it's just they've been overwhelmed. I think when Merrick Garland came in, there was a bit of a pause. I think things were put on a little more intelligent footing. There wasn't this panic to look like you were, you know, going after the seditious conspiracy charges. Right. And instead, like what I described is that they've got these three prongs of arrests that we're seeing: the assault defendants, the MAGA tourists who have interesting things on their phone, and the actual co-conspirators. That effort, I think, is what happened when Merrick Garland, and then even on a larger delay, Lisa Monaco, showed up. But there was a guy who pled guilty this week, and Lisa Monaco was actually on the public line listening to him.
Oh, really?
So, you know, she's clearly very, very involved in this. And remember, her background is in National Security Division. So she's done a lot of terrorism cases. She knows how this works.
Oh, interesting. So you mentioned the one guy who pled guilty. Do you know how many plea deals there have been so far that have actually gone through?
Just two that we know of.
Just two.
And so the guy who pled guilty this week was literally just a MAGA tourist.
Oh, wow.
You know,
okay.
Made it to the Senate. He was in there for he wasn't in there very long, but he's gonna, like, the suggested sentence for him starts at 14 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's, you know, that he didn't engage in any violence.
Yep.
He did rifle through some papers in the Senate, but beyond that, you know, and he was one of the early people. He got into the Senate early enough to be there. So he was a straight guilty plea. And then this guy named John Schaefer, who is involved with the Oath Keepers, got a cooperation agreement. I fully suspect that there are a number of other people who've gotten cooperation agreements who are being cultivated for cooperation agreements, but we only know of that one.
Gotcha. So this stuff is generally not done out in the open. So the fact that you're getting all this is just a tribute to your investigative work. You're keeping on top of everything, because there's so many different channels, as you're saying, with 450 some odd arrests made. And you mentioned these are sort of the rank and file, from the MAGA tourists to the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys organizers. But there is still that other question, which is who from Trump world might have been involved. And there's so much that says Roger Stone was there. There's so much that says that Rudy Giuliani was involved. But it's making those cases that's the hard part, and I guess very time consuming.
Yeah. You know, it, like, even before they charge Stuart Rhodes or Enrique Tarrio, right, they're going to want to have that nailed down, just because they're higher profile. They clearly have, you know, they're getting closer to Stuart Rhodes. They've arrested a lot of people who know what Stuart Rhodes was doing. Rhodes never went into the Capitol, so you need to substantiate, you know, precisely what he was doing and how he's responsible for the people who did. Same thing with Tarrio. Obviously, he was back in Florida because he had been arrested and sent home already. And then it's the same kind of thing that you do to get to the next level. Alex Jones, by the way, is another one. One of his video producers has been arrested, though. And so you see it, you know, you just think of these networks that the far right has, and you see Roger Stone's the classic case. You see how closely networked he is with these people, and
all of them.
But you know, you have to get some kind of evidence, and that may take getting defendants to flip.
Gotcha. Now, again, we're speaking with Marcy Wheeler. You should follow her on Twitter at Empty Wheel and check out the blog every day, emptywheel.net. So Rudy Giuliani is an interesting case in many ways, on a number of levels. So there is, I guess, an investigation into his complicity in the insurrection. But there's also the other burgeoning case against him that is the reason for the raid on his apartment and his office. You wrote a piece about the role of the special master. Can you tell us what that's about?
Sure. So after they raided his apartment, SDNY, so Manhattan's federal prosecutors, SDNY said, hey, we'd like a special master, just like we did with Michael Cohen. And, you know, that so that's how they've spent the last month is, you know, getting the judge to say we're going to appoint a special master. Yesterday, both sides said we want the same special this woman, Barbara Jones, this former judge. We want Barbara Jones to be the special master. They agreed on it. Right.
Okay.
And I had been seeing what was going on before this happened. But when he was raided, Rudy was like, you should treat me the same way you treated Michael Cohen. And I'm like, oh, Rudy, that's not going to go well for you. Because,
right.
And it was amazing because Rudy should know better since he was Trump's lawyer. Mueller actually, he got Michael Cohen's iCloud and Gmail account and Trump Organization emails.
Ooh.
He got those from Microsoft in the summer of 2017. And he did it covertly. And then the next April, they went and seized his phones.
Right.
And by then they hired the special master, the same woman, Barbara Jones. And Barbara Jones got to a point where she's like, okay, I'm going to declare this not privileged. And Ooh. Trump thought about arguing it. And then SDNY, the prosecutors, were like, well, you know, you can keep the stuff secret, but you have to have the argument publicly. And once the judge said, yeah, you got to make the argument publicly, then Trump said, oh, never mind. And that's how we got the phones. That's how we got the messages of Michael Cohen recording Trump engaging in this hush payment.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And what is clear when you look at all the filings in this case is that they couldn't get it when they did the covert seizure back in the summer. They only got it because it was because of the way filter teams work. They only got it after hiring Barbara Jones and doing this special master review. And she took a look and she's like, this is not privilege. This is crime fraud exception.
Wow.
And the filings with Rudy and Victoria Tuncig make it clear that some of what the filter team, so they, you know, that, so the important thing to remember is there was a warrant obtained against Rudy and Tuncig back in November 2019. And since that time, Barr like prevented that team from going any further with their investigation. He went through unbelievable, even for Barr, he went to unbelievable lengths to prevent them from investigating Rudy any further, which would have had the effect, by the way, of investigating Rudy for accepting Russian disinformation that was specifically targeted towards the 2020 election. So that's what Barr did by preventing SDNY from investigating any further was to prevent them from stopping a Russian disinformation campaign in its tracks. That's what Barr did deliberately and knowingly.
Wow.
So Barr holds it up for, you know, for 18 months basically. And then as like literally the day that Lisa Monaco is confirmed, she signs the okay for the warrant to do the seizure. And in the filings about the November stuff, SDNY is quite clear that the filter team that said some of this is obviously crime fraud exception.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we know why it is because, you know, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman got arrested for this stuff way back in October 2019. And that's what they're looking at. That's what they had seized was the stuff implicating them. And so, so there's, you know, assuming that Barbara Jones does what she did the last time, she's going to take a, I mean, there was a letter that John Dowd, another one of the president's former lawyers,
right,
wrote just as impeachment was bubbling up. It was in Comic Sans. I tweeted it today so people can go to my Twitter account and see it. And he said, well, you see, Fruman and Parnas have Rudy is their lawyer. And they are doing service for Rudy in the service of Donald Trump.
Oh, God.
And they're also doing service for Victoria Tomczyk. So what he tried to do was wrap this net of attorney-client privilege around what was going on. And that's what Barbara Jones has been hired to unpack.
Wow.
And she's done it in the past. So that's where the Rudy thing is going to go. And like I said, Rudy is going to try and take down everybody with him, like Barr.
Right. I mean, well, I hope so.
I am not exaggerating when I say that Barr deliberately and knowingly made sure that SDNY could not shut down a known channel of Russian disinformation designed to affect the 2020 election. I am not
exaggerating. Huge. That's huge.
Yep.
There's so many different tentacles here. I mean, I'm amazed that you can keep them straight. I mean, just looking at Rudy Giuliani alone, all the different ways that he is complicit in different crimes. And then I have to wonder about Trump. Now, I know, and Eric Trump, I guess, let it slip the other day that they keep getting hit with subpoenas. But do you think that there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that we're not privy to yet? And one day just indictments are going to come down? Or is it wishful thinking that I'm engaging in?
I don't think people should spend their time hoping that Merrick Garland is going to prosecute Trump.
Right.
We have every reason to believe that Tish James and Cy Vance are very aggressively doing that.
Yep.
And so I don't, why worry? Why invest the energy? And that's going to be financial. That's going to be like paper case. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be, you know, the Trump family cheated the state of New York over decades. That's hard to spin as political. Right,
right.
If something happens at DOJ, something happens at DOJ. If Rudy Giuliani decides he's going to take down Donald Trump because he gets taken down, great. But don't bet your farm on that.
Sure.
Because, you know, Tish James has made it clear that she believes they're going to move towards some kind of indictment there.
Okay. But that's for his crimes that he's committed, not while he was president. That's before, yeah. Because he's always been involved in shady crap. You know, I looked at the Merrick Garland, the Justice Department decision to drop a case against Trump and company for the clearing of Lafayette Square a year ago Monday. And it pissed me off. And then when I read more about it, I guess you can't, if they're in the process of protecting the president, ostensibly, then no civil charges can be brought. But they weren't protecting the president. He was fine until he decided to walk through Lafayette Square.
Right, but that's the kind of thing where the plaintiffs have a really good case. Mm-hmm. Yes, as you say, you know, the standard is that DOJ has to defend that. And so it is entirely unsurprising that Garland is defending that. I promise you it is, you know, but it's going to continue. And as part of continuing, we're going to make these cases. And those, I imagine, are the kinds of things that Garland would not cry if he lost on appeal, but is not going to deviate from DOJ. He's not going to make the decision that this is an exception.
Right. Whereas he's going to do what he has to do.
He's going to permit the D.C. Circuit to make that decision. And maybe some of these cases will hold. I mean, same thing with the Barr memo. Like, I think that one of the possible reasons why Garland ended up trying to withhold part of the Barr memo on this OLC opinion deciding not to prosecute Trump is that if it becomes public, I mean, as much as you don't want to prosecute a former president, you also don't want to prosecute a former attorney general.
Right.
And the questions about what Barr did, you know, where it enters into criminal territory are really difficult in any case. I mean, honestly, because he was the attorney general and you have prosecutorial decision. And so, you know, and so how you could ever get to Bill Barr for decisions he made as attorney general are really questionable. You might get there, but I think that, you know, I don't think Merrick Garland is going to set out to go prosecute
Right.
Barr.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I think if, for example, the inspector general did a report showing that all of the times the Barr interfered with prosecution were corrupt in a way that goes beyond normal decisions, including and his way of, I mean, one of the important things about that OLC opinion is it necessarily, like, there's a part of it that will say things, you know, hiring and firing decisions by the president can't be obstruction. That's the 19-page memo that Barr got hired, you know, that basically Barr wrote.
Right, his audition, like, yes.
It's 8 pages they're withholding. Some section of that 8 pages basically says, that argument you made, boss, right? But another part of those 8 pages necessarily says, here's why the dangled pardons for Mike Flynn, Roger Stone, and Paul Manafort are not obstruction. And I've argued that making any prosecutorial decision in March 2019 was improper because
sure.
those were crimes in process.
Right.
And all three of them, and Bill Barr, like, if you look at what happened after he wrote that letter, Barr did crazy things to try and prevent these men from doing prison time, and therefore to prevent Trump from being, you know, from thinking that he might pardon them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, Trump pardoned all of them.
That's
and
right.
he not only pardoned all of them, but at a time when Roger Stone was very, very, very explicitly saying, if you, you know, like, I lied for you.
Right.
About these 26 conversations we had during the election year. When Stone was saying that, he didn't say I lied for you, but he did. Trump commuted his sentence. And
oh,
so,
God.
You know, like, you can't get a more clear example of using a pardon for obstruction. And a guy named Bill Barr in his confirmation hearing said that stuff like that counts as a crime. And so Bill Barr, what that memo actually does is provide some explanation that should distinguish those three cases from what Barr said in his confirmation hearing three times could be a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever argument it is, it will be inadequate to what happened afterwards. And so that, my guess, is the really big reason why DOJ doesn't want that released, because I suspect that it is tangential to stuff that the inspector general is investigating, but B, you know, if it gets released, then Bill Barr is on the hook for those corrupt pardons.
Right. Well, good. I mean, he should be. So I guess we have to wait and see how it unfolds. I mean, these things,
but this
do...
is another example where I think Merrick Garland isn't going to make these decisions himself. If the DC Circuit forces him, great.
Gotcha.
But he's not going to make, you know, like, and then if he has to prosecute Bill Barr, then he can say, well, you know, it wasn't my choice. I fought hard not to.
Yeah.
And the DC Circuit or the Inspector General or somebody else made me do it.
Right. Whether you think that's right or not, I mean, I think Bill Barr should be prosecuted, but that's me. Marcy Wheeler, I know you have to run. Let me ask you one last question. With
yes.
all this stuff going on, what do you make of Donald Trump insisting he's going to be reinstated in as president in August?
I think people should not dismiss it as a delirium.
Uh-huh.
I think people should remember that he successfully called a coup once, and
yep.
I think that he would love to call a coup again. And so, you know, like, this notion that, oh, it doesn't work that way. The reason it doesn't work that way is because it would be a coup, but we know that he has a pattern of
trying to
attempting coups.
Right.
And so we should use this as, we should recognize it as nothing else but Trump trying to sow another coup.
Wow. Okay. Important. That's really important. And I'm glad you said that, because you got to take this guy seriously. As crazy as he is, he's got this cult following that I never thought he could amass, and yet they're still with him, and they're you know, now they're looking at this like they looked at January 6th, which
and
scares
Mike Flynn.
Me. Right.
I mean, Mike Flynn
also
just called for a coup.
Yes,
so you put
did.
Those two together, and the two people who were publicly calling for a coup a month before the January 6th coup attempt are calling for an August coup.
Yep.
And so I think that you know, he may be a delirious old man, but he has successfully once already attempted a coup.
Right.
And so you can't dismiss it as just the rants of a crazy old man.
Could Michael Flynn be arrested for his comments at that QAnon convention the other day?
not for the comments themselves.
Really, for saying, that we should have a Myanmar-type coup, military coup here? That's okay for a...
That's still protected, yeah. But I think that, you know, it was noticed. There's a pattern in practice with Mike Flynn doing other things, so we'll see where that goes.
Gotcha. Marcy Wheeler, I can't thank you enough. Thank you for doing this work. It's so important, and you're so good at it. Emptywheel.net is where you find her on Twitter at Empty Wheel. Marcy Wheeler, I really, really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Great to talk to you, Nicole.
You too.
Take care.
Take care. Marcy Wheeler, thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. Bye. Now for the news. See you Monday.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We begin today with encouraging economic news. The monthly job report on Friday morning says the U.S. economy added 559,000 jobs in May, a sign of a strengthening recovery as vaccinations rise and COVID restrictions ease around the nation. The unemployment rate dropped from 6.1 to 5.8%. Well, it's apparently still Infrastructure Week. The Washington Post reporting that President Biden, in a Wednesday meeting with the top Republican negotiator, Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, said that he would cut the size of his infrastructure proposal to about $1 trillion and drop his proposal to pay for it partly with a corporate tax hike. Instead, Biden suggested that they could raise money by eliminating loopholes that corporations and wealthy taxpayers use to lower their tax bills and setting a minimum corporate tax rate of 15%. Obviously, that's lower than the current 21% rate or the 28% that Biden originally proposed. But if it means that the 55 or so of America's largest corporations like Amazon, FedEx, and Nike, who've avoided U.S. tax liability for three straight years, would have to pay at least 15%? Well, that would be a good thing. Republicans proposed covering the costs of upgrading roads, bridges, and other infrastructure by repurposing unspent money that had been set aside for coronavirus relief. They say Biden's plan was unacceptable because it still sought to pay for infrastructure with increased tax revenue from businesses. I have an idea. Kill the filibuster. Sorry, I digress. The White House announced Thursday that the U.S. would start shipping out the first of 80 million COVID-19 vaccine doses that the president promised to send overseas. The U.S. vaccine supply is now exceeding demand, so the Biden administration has faced mounting pressure to share those doses with hard-hit nations that are struggling to contain the virus. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said some of the initial doses were being sent to India, Gaza, and the West Bank, and other places that he said are facing crises. Well, some Democratic House members have signed a letter to the White House, urging the president to get more aggressive in distributing vaccines to help countries like India, South Africa, and Brazil, where the coronavirus crisis is particularly dire. Here at home, COVID-19 cases among children have fallen to levels not seen since October, but experts are still urging parents to vaccinate their kids if they can. One reason is that states that don't reach high enough vaccination thresholds may just be prime for another outbreak, this according to the director of the National Institutes of Health. Facebook changing some policies? They're announcing Friday that the social network will end an exemption for politicians from its rules against hate speech. This change would mark a major reversal following a lot of criticism that they were too lenient on powerful leaders during Trump's presidency. After the 2016 election, Facebook weighed the newsworthiness of political speech against the threat that it would cause harm. Well, under this new policy, the company will stop considering newsworthiness and decide whether to permit posts by politicians based solely on adherence to those anti-hate rules. In cases of extraordinary newsworthiness, Facebook could still make an exception, but would disclose those cases publicly. Two Senate committees are expected to release a 100-page-plus report next week on the security failures that led to the January 6th Capitol insurrection. The findings from the Senate Rules and Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committees will likely provide the basis of a new funding package to increase capital security. But the report does not examine Trump's role in the run-up to the attack. The Republicans are still trying to block an official bipartisan commission to investigate the attack. Two Capitol police officers shared their experiences for the first time on Thursday, saying rioters beat them, threatened to shoot them, and called them traitors. And they don't understand why the Republicans are trying to gaslight the nation about what happened on January 6th. U.S. Capitol Police Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell speaking on CNN Thursday night.
People got hurt. People got injured. I got hurt. I got injured. Threats were made against the officers, against their family, against the members, against the vice president, and against the speaker. And for them to whitewash this, like I'm making it up, like somebody told me that, this is why Black Lives Matters or Antifa. There was no Antifa there. All the people, the sea of people that was there, they were saying, President Trump sent me here. He's our president. He sent us here, and we won't listen to anything that you say that day.
And then this happened. Former Vice President Mike Pence acknowledged for the first time that he and the former guy don't, quote, see eye to eye on January 6th.
January 6th was a dark day in the history of the United States Capitol. But thanks to the swift action of the Capitol Police and federal law enforcement, violence was quelled. The Capitol was secured. And that same day, we reconvened the Congress and did our duty under the Constitution and the laws of the United States. You know, President Trump and I have spoken many times since we left office. And I don't know if we'll ever see eye to eye on that day. But I will always be proud of what we accomplished for the American people over the last 4 years. And I will not allow Democrats or their allies in the media to use one tragic day to discredit the aspirations of millions of Americans.
What? But Pence still didn't blame Trump for inciting the riot that nearly got him killed. Pence's remarks were made to Republicans gathered at a dinner in New Hampshire. They were his most detailed discussion of Trump's attempts to overthrow democracy and remain in power, despite losing the 2020 election by 7 million votes. Sad, really. Well, it took long enough. After more than 2 years, former White House counsel Don McGahn is testifying before congressional investigators on Friday. This has been in the works since McGahn defied a subpoena in April of 2019 following Trump's orders. Although the impeachment trials are done and we're now well into the Biden years, the battle to get the testimony has continued. For Democrats, it's about the principle of the thing. But the Washington Post is reporting that the appearance is the Democrats' way of demonstrating that congressional subpoenas must be obeyed, an argument they offered throughout a lengthy legal battle that looked like it was headed to the Supreme Court. But finally, this deal with the Biden administration ended with an agreement that brings Don McGahn to Capitol Hill on Friday. Unfortunately, this hearing is being held behind closed doors. So the Justice Department seems like they're finally going to get serious about dealing with cyber warfare. After some huge attacks, including one that shut down the Colonial Pipeline and created fuel shortages in the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic, the DOJ announced a new policy on investigating ransomware attacks as terrorism. The internal guidance issued Thursday came as the world's largest meat producer, a company called JBS out of Brazil, worked on getting its U.S. plants back online after a ransomware attack blamed on Russian hackers forced a brief shutdown of its U.S. plants. It disrupted distribution, raised meat prices, and caused some shortages. Under this new guidance, U.S. attorneys' offices will share information through a central task force in Washington, D.C. to help make connections and, quote, disrupt the whole chain. And finally, a report on the dozens of unidentified aerial phenomena, as they're calling them, documented by Navy pilots, is expected very soon. On Friday, the New York Times published some early details from the report saying that U.S. intelligence officers have found no evidence that they are alien spacecraft. Okay. But the report doesn't explain decades of unusual sightings and does not firmly rule out the theory that they could be alien in nature. Just saying. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.